10 years old, a new girl moved into our neighborhood. She wasn't particularly funny or creative or any of the things I usually liked in a new friend, but what she did have was a trampoline. And as a kid, having a trampoline is like as an adult having a beachfront vacation home. So I flattered that girl and I brought her a plate of cookies I made because all I wanted was not to know or love her, but to know and love her trampoline. When I was a chemically dependent 19-year-old young woman living with 8 people in a 2-bedroom apartment and working in a coffee house, a regular customer took a liking to me, a professional woman in her 20s, and I remember feeling special when she expressed interest in me and my ideas and my stories. I was desperate for connection. So when she invited me to an event, I accepted, only to discover her interest in me had nothing to do with me as a person and everything to do with her as someone embroiled in a multi-level marketing scheme. She was trying to use me to get something for herself. And I remember feeling foolish when I realized this. But it's just the shitty thing we humans do to each other. Sometimes we use each other for trampolines. Sometimes we use each other for profit. And sometimes we use each other because we're just fucking lonely. I'm Nadia Boltzweber, and you've stepped into the confessional. It's like a car wash for our shame and secrets. Today, I'll be speaking with someone who manipulated a perfectly nice person many years ago and is now ready to talk about it. For listeners joining me in the confessional for the first time, stay tuned after the interview for a blessing I've written just for my guest, but maybe also for you. Hey, confessional listeners, I just want to thank you for supporting this podcast. And I wanted you to know that there's a place called The Corners where I regularly engage with readers, post essays and prayers and bonus content from this podcast. It's called The Corners because it can feel as though some of us have been relegated to the edge of every space we are in. But here's the thing. I love The Corner. I always have. It's where I always choose to sit. Because from there, you can see the whole room. And because I love the other people who hang out there. I love outcasts and queers and the girls who talk too loud. Because I love the kind of humor that comes out of lives that have not been easy. Because I love sober drunks and single dads and sex workers and the guy who lost a leg in the war. Because these are my people. And you can join us and engage with me and my work at nadiaboltzweber.substack.com. That's nadiaboltzweber.substack.com. Join other folks who share my love of grace, snark, confession, mercy, pop culture, and of course, God. We'll see you there. Joining me in the confessional today is the actress and producer, Amy Brenneman. So, Amy, what came to mind for you when I asked if you'd like to step into the confessional?
What came to mind was a story from when I was maybe 26, 25. I had been traveling with a theater company for about 5 years, and it was a very long winter. We were doing Ibsen.
Which is also a very long winter.
And I was surrounded by my best friends in the world, but none of those were a romantic connection. And I was really longing for that. So I remember it snowed on May 22nd. And I remember laying my head down on the table of this communal kitchen and just sobbing with my friend Bill and just saying, I can't do this anymore. Like, I just need, I'm just a little done with being on the road. A week later, in a complete explosion of, it's like Northern Maine skips spring. Like, it just, we just went right to summer. And suddenly it was beautiful and blue sky and the end was in sight. And we were putting on the play. And one of the people that came to see the play was the brother of a woman who lived in the town. I'll call him Will. And he had beautiful long hair, like kind of an interesting combination of kind of hippie mountain guy, but all, he was an electrical engineer. He was like super brainiac. So within, you know, who's counting, 3 hours of meeting him, we were having sex outside among the daffodils. And it was so joyful. I just felt like I was coming back to life. And I had this enormous orgasm and then burst into tears of joy, relief, release, everything. And Will looked at me really sweetly and he was like, oh, wow, I can see you've been really lonely. And my defenses went up. I just couldn't bear that he saw my truth. And I said, no, I haven't. I think we have an incredible connection. I think this is you. I'm not lonely. I just remember that feeling of being so exposed and I couldn't deal. In a way, I was meeting up with a much more evolved person who was comfortable with emotion. You know, it was just, he was the person that had done the work. And I was so defensive.
Why did you not want somebody to see that you were lonely?
I don't know. Because it was so, it was the truth. I mean, I was sobbing a week before with my friend. I mean, I'd been terribly lonely.
And where was Will coming from?
So Will had just gotten out of a marriage and was very clear and lovely with me and said, this was so great and you seem so awesome. I'm in a place in my life where I'm consciously allowing myself to date lots of different people. And my ego just couldn't take it. He was going to go back to Dartmouth in New Hampshire to get his master's. And I definitely was moving to New York after the summer. And I just, you know, within 2 weeks said, I'm uncomfortable with you dating other people. That doesn't work for me. I think I'm falling in love with you. And I just wore the guy down, basically. I just made it my mission to get him all to myself.
Can you name for me the need that you were trying to get met when you thought, I have a mission and it is to get him for myself exclusively? It sounds like it wasn't like, I'm definitely in love with this guy and my heart can't bear not being with him. It sounded like it was something else.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we can figure out the word for it, but I'll tell you, it's like it's located in exactly, and again, this is more historic. I still have it a little bit, like professional jealousy, much, much less than I did, but it's located in the same exact place. Like I had it really deep years ago. I had a really good friend who was in a movie she was nominated for an Oscar for it. And I was consumed with jealousy and felt terrible because she's so worthy and I love her, but I was consumed with jealousy. I don't have that anymore.
And you think that's the root of it, is going, I can't bear for another girl to have the thing that I want to have. Even if I don't even want to have it that much, I'm going to want to have it more if I think she'll have it instead.
For sure. And then I get to make the decision. I want to be able to make the choice. You know, it's like, I want to know, you know, I want to be offered the acting job and then then I can relax, my adrenaline system goes down and go, okay, do I really want to do this? But until I'm offered it, until it's mine, you know, I'm competitive enough, I am going to go after it. I remember reading about something that Cate Blanchett was doing. It was a movie. It sounded amazing. I was like, oh, dang, like that sounds great. I hate my lot. I wish I had that movie. And then the very last paragraph was like, it shoots in Bulgaria for 6 months. And I literally remember going like, oh, I don't care that much, actually.
All right. Okay. So you got the guy all to yourself. And then what happened?
I just was crawling out of my skin that summer, honestly. And I remember, you know, and I was very tight with my parent, I mean, specifically my dad. So it wasn't like it was an excruciating place to be, but it was... I was sleeping in my childhood bed, quite literally. And, you know, because the nature of this theater company was, you know, we'd go off and have these adventures and it was amazing and changed my life, but I didn't have a home of my own. So I'd sort of get plopped down in suburban Connecticut and it was so uncomfortable. And I remember this one night I was going to go visit him, and I was going to get up at like, you know, in the morning and drive. And I was crawling out of my skin. I mean, it must be like, you know, a junkie need, like, I just couldn't stay in that house. And I was sort of speaking as a rational person, which I was not at that moment. Like, you know, I think I'm going to get a jump on it. I think I'm going to drive. And it was like 10:30 at night. And my father looked at me like, what is going on? Like, he was a very important escape valve for me. And, you know, I couldn't really be honest about any of it. And the only language was like, he's my boyfriend. And then by the end of the summer, I had worked on him with my laser ego beam to the point where he said, I think maybe, you know, I should go to Columbia and then we could continue this. And so the confessional part is I moved to New York and I never return his calls and I never write him back. And he's writing to me. This is sort of pre-email, but he's writing to me. He's calling me. As soon as I got a bit of a life going, I dropped him. And I've never talked to him or made amends or anything. I mean, I guess the reason I thought of the story is, you know, it's one thing if, I mean, if you're just, yeah, if you're mutually hurting each other, you know, but it's like, oh, geez. I went after something I didn't even want and then, it was just like, what a dick I was.
Hey friends, I just wanted to thank you for listening and to let you know that if you want to support the podcast even more, you can head over to iTunes where you can rate it and even more importantly, where you can write a review. It's really the best way to help make sure other people find out about The Confessional. And if you'd like to hear and read more from me, you can sign up for my free newsletter and receive regular essays and prayers and, let's be honest, a whole lot of opinions over at nadiaboltzweber.substack.com. That's nadiaboltzweber.substack.com. That's my little corner of the internet called, appropriately enough, The Corners. See you there. Thanks so much. I mean, do you think in a way that what you're describing is like a protective mechanism because you're just less likely to be taken advantage of or to be hurt or to be the one who is cheated on if you sort of preempt that by being that to the other person or doing that to the other person?
100%. 100%. I once had a therapist say, who was very gentle. She was like super soothing, loving, very femme, lovely gal in New York. And she once said, I've never seen anyone move quite so quickly to contempt.
To contempt for what?
Whatever had been the object of my affection 5 minutes before. Like I, you know, it just could go from like, yay, you're my guy, to like, ooh, get away from me. Like not only get away from me, but like you're gross and I can't even be in your presence.
Well, you're just always the subject, right? And they're always the object. So either they're the object of your like desire or I have to make sure this guy is in my basket or whatever, you know, it's like I have to acquire this person or whatever, or they're the object of your scorn or your contempt, right? But in any way, they're never the subject, right?
No.
But now you've had 2 decades of being with someone who's the subject, your husband, Brad, right?
Right. Right. And I think the more I quote unquote got away with stuff with guys like that is where you have contempt, right? Because somebody, and with Brad, he would say like, what the fuck are you doing? He saw me. He saw me entirely and was like, why are you doing this? I'm like, I don't know. Then I had to do my work. But I had just more often than not just got away with whatever I was doing, you know, which on the one hand felt really powerful. On the one hand, I hated myself and had contempt for the people for being so dopey.
Yeah, but you know what? Getting away with what you're doing, again, it seems like, whoa, look at this. I'm killing it. But it's its own prison, isn't it?
Of course. You know, I had one of Brad's in my early, well, we were together for about a year and we had this moment that completely changed my life. So we'd been dating, we're in love, you know, it was happening. And I don't even remember what the inciting incident was, but I did something that I was aware, like, ooh, he's going to be mad at me. And I wonder how this is going to go down. And he came in and he's a really, you know, emotionally dropped in person. And he was pissed. And he said, number one, I love you so much. Number two, I am so mad at you. And my whole nervous system relaxed. And I was like, oh, if number one is true, I can actually hear your anger and nobody's going anywhere. So I think in a way, what you're talking about, like, how do you, you know, in a true human Jesus-y way, it's like, I love this person who's struggling. And as a human on the planet, I'm having a hard time, you know, and I have opinions.
Well, Amy, I really am so grateful that you were willing to tell this story to me. I think there are probably other people out there who have something like that in their past where they're like, I manipulated a situation and this person got caught up in it. And then I just dropped it at like that whole like, wow, I really did treat them like an object. I think when we sort of grow and mature later in our lives, we get this perspective on behavior that we exhibited, especially in our 20s. And we're like, ugh. Then you have words for what that actually was, you know, and it can be heavy. So I just know there's going to be people who listen who had the same experience. So thanks for just getting out there with it. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for being you and creating a space for all of it.
A blessing for Amy. Dear Amy, I wouldn't be in my 20s again for all the money in the world. I didn't yet know how to live a human life, and my nervous system interpreted everything that happened to me as a crisis. I feel like this is what you were describing when you said, at 25, you couldn't bear for a sweet guy to see the truth of your loneliness. That at 25, your ego couldn't take a guy wanting to see other women. That at 25, you were crawling out of your skin. We all were, Amy. We were all crawling out of our skin at that age. But you can't crawl your way out of your skin. You can only shed it. And I think maybe we can't shed old skin until our nervous system learns to stop looking around for escape valves every time we feel lonely or threatened or sad. You described it, you know. You told me that when you were dating Brad, something happened and you felt threatened, like you would lose him. And he said, number one, I love you so much. Number two, I'm so mad at you. Your whole nervous system relaxed, you said. So Amy, number one, you are so loved. Number two, you hurt someone when you were young. But number one, you are so loved. Whatever the second thing may be in your life, that you lied, that you made someone angry, that you didn't get a part and Cate Blanchett did, whatever it is, it will never be the first thing. Because the first thing is and will always be that number one, you are so loved. Amen. Next time on The Confessional, I speak with a singer-songwriter about violence and his own toxic masculinity.
I held, you know, Nate's face as far away from me as I could so that he couldn't hit me. And then with my right hand, I tried to destroy him.
In the meantime, here's a confession from a fellow listener. It's a segment I call Shit I'm Not Proud Of.
Hi, this is Terry. And I'm calling to tell you that sometimes, just so my husband thinks that I have hurried home and cooked for him, I will hurry home and just fry onions in a skillet and serve takeout.
Do you have some shit you're not proud of? Call 618-CONFESS and leave me a message, and I might play it on the show. The Confessional is produced by House of Pod and Shameless Media, with support and spiritual guidance from The Moth and PRX. Our original music is composed by Antoine Banks Williams.